gang, and welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. I am your host, Kelly Wells, and it is my birthday. So if it seems like maybe I've had like a beverage to celebrate or anything, ignore that. It is your imagination. So we are going to talk about tonight's show, which Tom kind of primed me saying that this was not going to be a good one, but I don't know. I thought it was perfectly decent as a show. It had its highs and lows, but we're going to talk about this week's show. Also, last week I talked about my game on Kickstarter called Fun Dead, the gravest show on earth. Justin said kind of out of nowhere that he was going to back somebody to be in the game, to be drawn into my game, on Kickstarter, that I'm doing through Kickstarter, which is only $190 from its goal. So we're almost guaranteed, the production of the game so far. And Justin's going to tell you all about that. But anyway, this is PWT Talks NXT. So after we get my game out of the way, we will talk about the episode. Justin James, who are you?
I am Justin James, the Weekly Torch TV specialist. You can find me at Twitter at Justin_M_James. And I'm pleased to announce that our winner of the contest is Chris Fielder, baby.
Chris Fielder,
congratulations,
baby.
Chris.
From Truth or Consequences.
Congratulations, Chris. And plot twist, we are going to have another contest, and you have to stick through to the end of the show.
Really?
To find out what that is.
Oh, interesting. Wow. All right. Plot twist. I like it. And we will find out. I'm already annoyed that I don't know what it is.
Do we get to...
What's that?
Do we get to enter? Because I want to win a date with Harley.
Is that what this is?
Well, that's part of the plot twist.
Okay. Since you have now spoken.
If by Harley Padgett, you mean a middle-aged, overweight man named Justin James.
All right. Tom, go ahead, and before this breaks down further, say who you are.
Indeed. I am at Tom Staup on Twitter. I'm the guy who does the tapings reports. I'm the guy who has a live event report from this past Friday up on the Torch, and I will cover that for our show here at the end of the show, so stick around also if you want to hear more about that live event. And I'm going to go on a little bit of defense because I didn't think this was going to be a bad episode. I just figured in terms of stuff for us to talk about, I didn't think it would be too substantial. We'll see. TBD. I'm also going to go on a little bit more defense, I guess, sort of maybe throw myself under the bus because I realized I was totally wrong last week about who Killer Cross is. He's not a member of LAX who ran over a little child on an episode of Impact, as I believed. That did happen, but it wasn't Killer Cross. Killer Cross, it's a whole other thing. I totally ruined the emailer's joke because I didn't know about a certain infidelity that happened. It's a quick Google search away if anybody is curious.
Okay. Sounds good. We just brought up Harley, and we're actually going to start the show with an email from Harley. This is something that he just sent us, and somebody is trying to get a hold of me on my phone, so they are getting up in my way. With his appearance on tonight's episode, Johnny Gargano ties Sasha Banks by appearing on 88 different episodes of NXT. Bayley, Tyler Breeze, Sami Zayn, and Neville are the only people who have racked up more NXT episode appearances solely in a wrestler capacity. I.e. Regal, Watson, Graves, and Phillips have more appearances, but most of those were as part of the broadcast team. So, Johnny, for those of you thinking that he's been on NXT for quite a while, you are correct because, he's right up there in terms of NXT appearances. So that is our email from Harley, and we'll see him in a bit. He is right now doing the Mae Young Classic, so he doesn't have time because right now he's watching the Mae Young Classic, so he can podcast about that for you. We're also going to go ahead and do an email from Kevin Kitani. Greetings and salutations, gents. I hope you're having a great week. Here are some thoughts and questions from last week's episode. As high as we all are on Lacey Evans, I'm pretty stoked for this upcoming feud with Candace. In stark contrast, the Keith Lee segment seemed clunky in the setup to get he and Kona together. Is there not a better next step for the Limitless One? Is there anything Montez Ford can't do? Realistically, how much longer do you think it will be before he gets a singles run? I thought the main event was a good match and was impressed with Otis's ability to hold his own as a single. What did you all think? Thanks, as always, the professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. All right, so as far as Lacey and Candice having a feud, it seemed like it was maybe just one more match, but we might get more out of this. I dare say that it left the door open for another match when Candice has her head together from a storyline standpoint. Keith Lee and Kona getting together. I guess I'm not worried about that being more seamless. This is going to be essentially a small step for Keith Lee at this point to move on. Is there anything Montez Ford can't do? The answer is no. And Otis was okay as a single, I guess. We talked about that, obviously, a lot last week. Anything more on this particular email, Tom?
No, you got it, man.
All right. And Justin?
Nope, not for me.
All right. So that was last week. So we've kind of moved on. So, okay. We also got Brian Alston, one of our readers last week, asked if we would take a shot at doing this in chronological order. So you know what? We're going to do that this week. So we opened with Nikki Cross. She prattled on a little bit about Bianca and, you know, playing and such. And maybe setting up a match there. Obviously, we'll have a match there later. And in addition to that, she said, I know. And once again, kind of insinuated that she knew who attacked Aleister Black. Now, any idiot can see that that is the insinuation here. For them to do an entire episode that starts with her saying, I know, and then doesn't end with us at least asking her the question, seems like kind of silly storytelling to me, because why wouldn't they be right there and say, oh, what do you mean by, you know, they should be doing that. But anything on, I guess, on Nikki's entire presentation and I guess this part of the saga. I've got some emails that that deal with this as well, so we'll probably get those out of the way. But before I start going through that stuff, Justin, on this segment.
I feel like we've beaten this horse so many times already in the last couple of weeks. We're like, everybody's sick of it on this. Like, all three of us are sick of it. Every reader who's mentioned it is sick of it. Between, you know, not the whodunit, we're sick of that. We're sick of Nikki Cross and her super crazy. We're all just sick of it. I feel like I should take some, like whatever that zinc stuff is that Howard Stern's always talking about. Or was in 2002, the last time I listened to him.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah, and I've been a bit more forgiving, both of the prolonged investigation. You know, I see more of the pros than the cons, in the sense that it's been an interesting catalyst for a lot of different feuds. It's touching almost every part of NXT right now. And, you know, there was that period, you know, one or two episodes there, or maybe a staggered, you know, one episode and then one bad one, and another good one, and another bad one, where you're like, oh, there's enough bad here that I'm not sure. Are they turning it into too much comedy? These backstage segments aren't going anywhere. But now with Nikki making these hints, it's piqued my curiosity again. Has me going back to that shot of her up on the roof, where I'm pretty sure that was the moment that was probably the first time when we here on the show kind of analyzed it, like, maybe you're getting a little excessive here. Why are we seeing this now? And maybe that will turn out to be one of the more important developments when we look back in retrospect. So I'm a little more favorable there. In terms of Nikki herself, I'm way on the ups. This is not the popular opinion on the show, but I am really enjoying her right now. Probably more than I ever have. It's working for me, and I like the idea that a wrestling show is the kind of place where you can go backstage and see people like that make you think, like, shouldn't they be kept behind bars, or, you know, in some way or another. Like, Lars Sullivan, I know I've mentioned it before, seems like somebody who should be kept in a shipping crate with a thesaurus that he's thumbing through constantly. And then they bust it open with a sledgehammer, and he just comes barreling out for his match, and then he goes back into his box. So yeah, no, I'm digging it, and although I can agree with the nitpick that it's a little weird that they brought it up again on this episode. I guess they're trying to keep the story alive, but if they weren't going to do anything more with it on this particular episode, maybe it's one where you can just show a replay of last week rather than show something else. Even though I did enjoy the little video.
Yeah, Nikki for me is on the verge, because I like for wrestling to be larger than life, but for better or for worse, about 15, 20 years ago, it started being a little more steeped in reality. WWE anyway. Other companies did kind of act in a more realistic realm. So I get what they're doing. And I think that NXT is certainly the place to try that kind of thing. It's just, it's a tightrope walk, because for a long time, people have not been accustomed. I mean, there are young fans who don't know wrestlers who go this far as in a character sense. So I'm not anti the idea of this, but there's got to be a line she can't cross, I guess, and to get too silly. And that's, you know, not just for us, but for her, because if she crosses over into silliness, that's not going to do any favors for her for her and her career. Justin, go ahead.
I mean, my 11-year-old is asking me pointed questions about Nikki Cross.
Okay.
He's asking, you know, like, how is this possible? Like, why isn't she, like, in a hospital? She's nuts. How is she working a job? How is she earning a living? And these are all questions that he's asking. And when the 11-year-old is picking apart the storyline, the 11-year-old who still thinks it's real, you know, I got a problem.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's fun. Sometimes we'll see. She's in a position, obviously, given that she knows something about the Black Attack, that something could come out of this storyline that helps her in one way or another, or at least gives her more dimension, which right now I think we need. So I have an email here from Paul Leonard. Hi, guys. Writing the first part of this email before tonight's NXT, because this is stuff that doesn't deal with tonight. Last week, you guys talked about a triple threat with both titles on the line and how that would work. Just wanted to say WrestleMania 2000 had that. Kurt Angle versus Jericho versus Benoit. Kurt was the European and IC title holder. They did two falls. First fall for one, second fall for the other title. I will jump in here and say, Paul, I actually recently watched that match because I somewhat recently watched that show. And so I don't know why I didn't think of that, considering it was only a couple of months ago that I watched that particular WrestleMania. But yes, I think that is something that worked for WrestleMania, because you've got, you know, a month or 2 months to promote that match. This match came about quick, so I can see why they didn't do it. But it's true. That is an option they could have done. So back to his email. Also wanted to hear your thoughts of the rumors of Punishment Martinez going to NXT. As a guy that has started watching ROH this year, I will say I'm just not that impressed with him, and I feel that he will sadly just be a boring big guy in NXT. Now for tonight's episode, not much I can add that you guys won't cover. Solid wrestling, excited for the return of Lorcan and Birch. At this point, I just want Eric Young to show up, hand Regal some pills with the explanation that he accidentally took Nikki's meds with him when he left. So, yeah, we already kind of covered Nikki there. As far as Punishment Martinez, I think I'm the only one of us three who watches Ring of Honor, and I think Punishment is fine. I think that he would probably settle into a Kane-type role where he's, or to be more contemporary, a Baron Corbin-type role where he's the big, tough guy who the unbeatable guy who always gets beat. And I know I've probably brought that up on this show because it's something that I've brought up before that I bring up a lot when I'm talking about roles for wrestlers. So I can see him doing that. I don't know if you guys have any frame of reference for Punishment Martinez. But, yeah, he's a decent big guy who can kind of move and is in some decent matches and is always kind of, he's always in the title hunt and never wins the titles for the most part. So, as far as that or that triple threat.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
Anything to add there, Tom?
If I didn't have a DVD version of it, if I had had a VHS cassette tape version of WrestleMania 2000, I would have worn it out. Since it was a DVD, I didn't, but I would have. And I believe I remember that match being incredible, which is understandable considering the people involved. Punishment Martinez, yeah, I guess I probably shouldn't add to that because I've only seen three of his matches, and Harley has tried to sell me on him in the past. I don't want to put words in Harley's mouth. I don't really remember exactly what he said, but I think it was something along the lines of him being sort of an acquired taste, and you have to watch him a few times to really get what he's about. So I think any judgment I would pass would be unfair.
Okay, yeah, I like him fine, and I've seen him more than three times, and he's all right. He's Kane. And like I've said before, being Kane is a damn fine thing to be because you can have a long career being Kane. Justin, anything else there?
This is a first for me. I don't think I've ever heard somebody who watches ROH discuss somebody currently on the ROH roster in less than glowing terms.
Oh, it certainly happens.
I'm sure it does.
I know what you're talking about with the Ring of Honor cult of personality. I know exactly what you mean. And there are people who are, let me say, brandists, and they can be that way. And their response to the apologist nature of the person who watches, because it's tough when you're arguing with somebody who watches WWE, the main roster, and their only argument is, but they make money, and you go, okay, but is Raw good right now? Is SmackDown good right now? This week, SmackDown had 22 and a half minutes of wrestling on a 2-hour show. I think that people run in that opposite direction and they say, everything about my brand is awesome. And they don't, you know, they don't think about it as much, but I know what you're talking about with the cult of personality.
Well, if Punishment Martinez comes to NXT, I'll be glad to welcome an former indie star who doesn't automatically get cheered just because people like him for his previous work.
Oh, I'm not saying that won't happen. It'll probably
really?
It might. He's not on the level. He's not like Matt Riddle or Keith Lee or somebody who had that kind of pedigree and that kind of.
Have you noticed that the former TNA guys don't get that reaction?
I have because I mean,
because more people watch ROH than TNA at this point.
But yeah, I mean TNA is just, well, it's not even called TNA, and listen, we still say TNA.
It's Impact Wrestling.
But I mean, that's the point I'm making, is that like we literally can't even call the company by its correct name because go ahead.
There are exceptions. James Storm got a "You Belong Here" chant the first of two times he showed up.
I, you know what, him not getting signed to NXT was one of the bigger disappointments I've had.
Well, I think that was his choice.
Of course it was his choice. I mean, my understanding is that they offered him the money and Impact Wrestling offered him the money and he looked at it and said, this is home. That was my understanding of it. I could just be making something up.
That sounds right, but it's been quite a while.
I'm really good at making up stuff that sounds right, so it's like... It's one of my superhuman talents, the art of BSing.
James Storm, if you can call us and just let us know if he's right or not, then I guess we'll be
call
fine.
Me maybe.
Right. Right. Okay. So, yeah, I think that kind of covers actually a few of our emails. So let's go to Candice LeRae versus Lacey Evans. Obviously... Ooh. As Johnny goes, so does Candice, and she is now in mired in her part of the storyline where she has to take her licks, take her losses, because they're setting up her getting more aggressive, more angry, things like that. I don't know where this is going, but right now it seems like she's benefiting because there's a story there. Lacey's benefiting because she's beating people with a name. And it was a decent-ish match, and I liked this sudden ending. I really did, where Candace had just grown so frustrated and so out of sorts that she just walked up to her without taking into account the woman's right, which would just lay her out. I dare say that I appreciated the ending, even though I was mildly surprised maybe that Lacey won this match. But right now that's the women's division is a little unpredictable outside of Bianca and outside of the two fighting over the title. So, and I think that's a good thing. So anyway, on Candace and Lacey, Tom.
Yes, I agree with everything you said. This, for the reasons you laid out, this might be my favorite woman's right that's been thrown yet. I really like how it ends the match, and this was very impactful. Candace sold it beautifully. And I'm intrigued to see where this new wrinkle of the Gargano storyline is going, as much as it may upset fans of Candace that she's still wrapped up in her husband's story. And I also thought it was a good match and still enjoy watching Lacey every time she's out. And I thought it was amusing that they cut to her daughter holding up the woman's right sign and they just sort of disregarded it, like, oh, they'll just think it's a fan. Don't mention it. It's a fan.
Right. And Justin on this match.
I thought that this match was beyond decent-ish. Now, you can look at the in-ring work itself and say, eh, decent-ish. But there was some absolute mastery in this match. And it had to do with, first of all, I don't think that they're dragging Candace back into the Johnny thing. This was Lacey Evans using the Johnny thing to get under Candace's skin. Because if you look at the evolution of Lacey Evans, this is what she always does. She finds the one thing to needle somebody about, right? She needled Dakota Kai about getting beat up by Shayna Baszler, right? She baited Dakota Kai into a match and won it because she got under Dakota Kai's skin. This is what she does. Like, she is like, she's becoming the Triple H, the Cerebral Assassin. And it's like such a cool thing. And she's squashing the roster along the way. And they're building her up to do these mind games. In this case, she was just dominant in this match until she went too far pushing Candace's buttons, till Candace just went nuts on her. And then Evans realized, oh, I can use this to my advantage, pushed her over the edge and baited her right into the women's right. And to me, that psychology of playing right to Lacey's character, of her dominating that match with her size and her power, and then Candace, you know, using her bulldog, her kind of bulldog attitude to overcome Lacey's natural physical advantages. I thought that was very well done. And we can debate the quality of the move, you know, the work rate itself, but the psychology going back months now with Lacey Evans, tonight just kind of flipped a switch. I've been saying, oh, I've liked the evolution of Lacey Evans, and now I'm like, oh my goodness, like this whole thing's like fitting this gigantic pattern, because I started thinking about Dakota Kai and all these other people that Lacey Evans has done this to. And the other thing too is, in terms of darker attitude from Candace, I mean, she had a lot of things change. Her ring gear was changed. Her lipstick was the evil Emma shade of purple black.
Yep.
I don't know what.
Yeah, from the tapings, I texted Harley because he was talking about, he's been talking on the Mae Young Classic about how all the bad guys are wearing black. And he recently predicted that Candace heel turn that we mentioned last week. So when she came out wearing black, I texted him like, hey, no spoilers, but
I mean her, she looked, I mean, her ring gear and her makeup was heel Emma. She just didn't have the shades.
Right.
Take it for what you will.
Yeah, and hey, for what it's worth, I've never been much of a work rate guy when it comes to criticizing matches. I did very much enjoy this, and that I will say though, why I wanted to cut in is just to point out the head scissors takedown into the push-ups.
Yes,
that
so
was
wonderful.
Awesome. Yes,
yeah, and that was an awesome little taunt, and I loved how they started this match with that tie-up. That just went on and on and on, where they refused to let go. It just totally sold the intensity of how angry Candice was about what Evans has been saying to her. Maybe the work rate wasn't, you know, Shawn Michaels versus, you know, Undertaker here, but it didn't have to be.
Yeah, and I love this from a storytelling standpoint too, for the reasons you brought up. This is very old school wrestling in terms of a heel picking scraps and winning matches and keeping a heel strong, but still allowing them to be a heel and making it so it's clear the babyface would have the advantage except for this, which is what you want, because you want your fan base to cheer the babyface because they know they're worth cheering. And if the babyface is the winner, then that's, you know, a winner in storyline terms, then that's somebody they want to cheer for. So you make her a loser, and I don't mean that as a criticism. You make her someone who would be a loser, but who works the system, who uses it to her advantage, and that's what's so brilliant about what has happened with her. She's definitely held up her end of the bargain. She has worked her ass off. She's awesome. And, But hopefully when she gets to the main roster, she's got that person there who knows what made her so special and doesn't say, okay, she's pretty, she's blonde, let's do this with her. And that's a big if, but she deserves it. She's worked really hard. So Chris Fielder says, hey guys, Lacey Evans looked really good tonight. It's like the chicken or the egg saying with her. I don't know if her improvement in her personality and overall character has driven me to see how much better her in-ring work has become, or if it is her work in the ring that has made me more invested in her character. Either way, I look forward now to seeing her work. I don't know if the first part of that match tonight was a botch or not, but that was one hell of a collar and elbow lockup. That's how every match with a personal feud attached should start out, in my opinion. Lacey now looks like a credible threat to the Women's Championship, which is something I thought I'd never say. What do you think about her latest progression? Also, I don't know where this leaves Candice. Is she going to be Johnny Gargano Part 2? Would NXT really have a crazy husband and wife duo? I don't think we've ever seen that before, but I think it could be pretty interesting. What do you guys think? Secondly, about the Forgotten Sons? Oh, never mind. I've already forgotten about them again. Thanks for everything, guys. Chris Fielder, baby. Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. As far as your question about the chicken or the egg, I think that these things, these progressions with Lacey were kind of concurrent. She got better at the in-ring and better from a character standpoint at the same time. I think she was a decent wrestler before she was a decent character. Your mileage may vary, but I think that was a little bit before. And that's, you know, that's just kind of, oh, I was going to get into a whole thing about acting and internal versus external, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to spare you because I'm not going to rattle off like entire books of Stanislavski to you. But yeah, I think that, her progression happened kind of on both ends at the same time. Great question why that is, how she was able to do it all at once. If she had somebody who was just her biggest advocate working hard, working overtime with her because they saw something special. That's a great question. And I guess I can see her in a title match now. I don't see her winning that title right now, but that doesn't have to be where she is. As long as she's in the mix, they've done more with her than I thought was going to be possible at one point. Anything else on that particular email, Justin?
If I recall the sequence, it just felt like she took some time off, and then she came back strong in the ring, strong as a character, like somebody just remolded her. Don't know what happened, but I definitely think they happened at the same time.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And Tom.
I agree regarding all of that. As far as the title contention goes, as much as I really like Lacey, the NXT Women's Championship, perhaps even better than the top men's championship, they have really done an excellent job of keeping the prestige level super, super high. And only the best of the best really get a turn with it. And right now, there are just at least Bianca and Nikki Cross, while she's still around, are the other people that I'm still looking at as far as forthcoming contenders. And Lacey, I really, really like her. She really is one of my favorites in the NXT women's division right now, as everybody's probably gotten sick of hearing me say. But I'm not sure if I view her in that echelon. And maybe I should. Everybody needs a title, and I don't think, honestly, me saying that I don't view her in that way, I'm not sure what else she would do with this character and with her ring work to get to that point. I think she's the kind of person that if she went up to the main roster without an NXT women's title run, I wouldn't be disappointed. I think that she could be very successful there, probably even more successful there. Weird comparison, but you look at somebody like Carmella, who barely did anything in NXT at all, and she's translated, I guess other people may argue, but I think she's translated very well to the way the main roster has presented her, and she's a champion now. So
yeah, I think what you're saying, Tom, at least to me, is that I don't think that Lacey Evans has a championship gimmick, and it has nothing to do with the quality of her working it.
Yes.
Or in the quality of the gimmick. It's just a gimmick that I can't see a title belt mixing with that gimmick. And I think she works great as that Chris Jericho gadfly, as that Miz gad. I mean, granted, they always hold those guys between the two of them held the Intercontinental Championship for the majority of my adult life.
Right.
Whatever Cody Rhodes didn't have. But, you know, Jericho and Miz both do that gadfly thing where they don't really need the title. Where they enhance the title. If you want the title on a heel, you put it on them. But they never actually need the title at all.
Absolutely. And the Women's Championship in NXT is not really in that situation.
Exactly. It is a main title. It's not the Intercontinental Championship. If they had something like the equivalent of the North American Championship for the women, Lacey Evans would easily be that character, that Jericho. But without that kind of title, she does not. I don't think she needs. I don't think she should be holding that main Women's Championship, and it has nothing to do with the quality of her work, and everything to do with what her gimmick actually is.
100%.
You redefine her as like the Stone Cold character. Yeah, I'll buy her.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to Tommaso Ciampa talking about the Velveteen Dream. What an odd mix of guys this is. What a strange joy it is to be able to see this this feud play out. Is it going to be a feud? I'm not sure. A couple of heels, very, very different in their presentation. Very just awesome in their roles. So we got Tommaso talking about Dream and making some vague threats. On this whole segment, Justin, anything?
I feel looking back on this segment and how Ciampa reacted to the Velveteen Dream, I feel that Dream's interview last week was a deliberate attempt to worm his way into that main event scene, that he knew that this is how Ciampa would react and that he snuck his way into the spotlight like Ciampa complained about just so he could do this and maybe beat Ciampa and maybe get a title shot.
All right. And Tom?
Yeah. After that segment last week and a couple tweets that Ciampa and I think Dream, but at least Ciampa sent out, I was a little surprised after we finished recording. I realized, oh, we never ended up getting around to that because that was pretty much confirmation that seems to be the way they're going. And yeah, I mean, I know this match has happened a couple times for the title at live events, but I've never seen it and I'm dying to see it. This is there's a reason that we were predicting that this was the way that it was going to go. And I think part of that reason was wishful thinking. And here we are. I think it's going to be a fun ride between these two excellent characters.
Don't dream it. Just be it.
Indeed. So
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Wow. Right. Thank you. Okay. So our second match was Forgotten Sons, Steve Cutler, Wesley Blake, and Jax's son, Riker, against Vinnie Mixon, Caesar Rise, and Torrey Kirsch. Were those the names? Who? I don't know. I am taking those names from Justin James, PW Torch contributor. I am looking at his recap just because I didn't write them down in time.
I did a screenshot. I actually hit snag it to take a screenshot of that to get it right.
Okay, sounds good. Then we can take those names to the bank. I'm seeing that Forgotten Sons won this match in 2:30. I am always amused when six-man tags take 2 minutes and 30 seconds just because, okay, nobody's getting their work in. But obviously you can't make this belabor the point any more than you already are. It's clear who they are positioning as the star of the Forgotten Sons. The camera work made that very clear that we want a Jack's son to be important. I don't know that. I don't know. I don't watch Impact, so I don't know if he's worth the effort. I don't see it yet, but I can't say that I have enough information. I need to see him in a singles wrestler with a named wrestler, not with somebody who's out there to do a quick job. But anyway, we had a six-man. It was decent. Enhancement fair. I'm also going to go ahead and do an email before I throw to you guys. Michael McGivern says, "Greetings, gents. I'm not sure what the Forgotten Sons are going for. They're not quite a biker gang. They're supposedly tied to the military somehow, but for having a name like Forgotten Sons, their characters don't talk about having PTSD. They're kind of like Sanity, but aren't from a dystopia in the not-too-distant future. What is the end game here exactly?" I'm going to be honest, Michael McGivern, I think that the Forgotten Sons are kind of a throw everything at the wall and see what sticks kind of team. I think they're going to see how the reaction is. I think they're going to see what they think after these guys go out there and do a few matches. I don't know if there's an endgame plan here at all. I think it's literally just trying something out, and maybe there's something further in mind. Tom has seen two more weeks of wrestling than we have, so maybe he's got some idea. But I would hazard to guess that by the end of this taping, we will know no more about the Forgotten Sons than we do now. Tom, non-spoiler version of your thoughts.
Yep, I can't fight the Sanity comparisons anymore. Every time I heard somebody say, oh, they're too close to Sanity, I'd be like, oh man, use your imagination a little bit more, just because their jackets are similar. And I've seen them enough times now, and every single time I can't not think about the fact that they just remind me of Sanity. I think it could just be a couple simple tweaks of not manically flailing around the ramp during the entrance. Maybe just stoically walk out with that straight ahead Jackson Riker glare. But yeah, you know, the most favorable thing that I still have to say about them is that I used to see something in Wesley Blake, and that's the best that I got. They've got a long way of proving to go. You know, sometimes when teams come in, you like War Raiders or Undisputed Era, or like even in the terms of War Raiders, I don't think we've been too favorable of them here on the show, but it seems inevitable that they will hold the title belts. And it seemed that way from the time that they were announced and especially when they debuted. And when Forgotten Sons come out, I don't really see them in the same light, even though I'm not a fan, as I'm also not yet a fan of War Raiders. I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah. About Wesley Blake, I do think that he is the standout worker of that group. Not that that is like they're fine. I don't want to sound like a jerk. They're fine. But it's kind of like that whole Kyle O'Reilly thing where Kyle O'Reilly is the best wrestler in Undisputed Era. And I don't know that he's going to stand out and be obvious in that way just because he doesn't seem like the person who would be. He doesn't look like the star. Like Adam Cole looks like a star in ways that those other guys just don't. He's got those eyes, man. He looks like a star. And that's obviously, this is on a different level because the Forgotten Sons are not on the level of the guys in Undisputed Era by any means or anything like that. They're still early. They're still learning. They're still doing something different. And obviously just a different style of wrestler too. These guys are Rough Rider wrestlers rather than polished work rate guys. So as far as Blake goes, I can see him kind of being there, but Blake has gone through so many different character tweaks. I just don't know what to think of him at all. As far as the Forgotten Sons, I will say at least this, I'm interested to see where they go with it. I'm not saying go away. I'm saying just show me something more. And I think that's at least a start. Justin, what do you think?
I have to ask Virgil to hold the $1 million belt while I heal on these guys a little bit.
Sounds fair.
So, okay, so Jackson Ryker is obviously the person that they're pushing hard here. Wesley Blake, when he was somebody where he said, I really thought this guy was cool. And not like I thought he was a cool heel, but where I said I thought this guy was a good heel is because he was doing these really goofy things, right? Like the things he was doing with his hair to draw heat, stuff like that. And this whole setup, he can't do the things that were drawing him heat. Because remember, he tried for a long time. He's probably been in NXT longer than anyone else, like paging Dr. Harley. If we were to look at, you know, who in NXT had the earliest debut, we're talking Wesley Blake.
Steve Cutler's got to be up there as well. Angelo Dawkins might be up there, but yeah, it could be.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that. Yeah, Blake and Dawkins are the two, and. You know, he's been around, and it took him forever to hit that heel stride with Murphy and Bliss. And it depended on him being goofy, and he can't do that in this thing. I think the gimmick is horrible. Even my kid's asking me about the sanity thing. I don't like the gimmick. I don't understand what's supposed to be. If these guys are supposed to be veterans, why am I supposed to be booing them? If they're damaged, if they're mentally damaged by something they went through, I should be incredibly sympathetic to them, right? Like these guys went to war and they've got PTSD or something. Like I should feel bad for these guys. I should, you know, want to get them help, not boo them.
Right. And it would be so easy too, because these guys could just go out there and say, we're better than you. We do more than you. It's a fine line because you don't want to piss people off by promoting veterans as jerks, but you can do it so easily.
Yeah, like maybe they could act entitled to respect. Like I went out there and I bled and got shot at to protect your freedom, and then I come here and, you know, you don't give me a ticker tape parade or maybe something like that.
I'm just
working off the top of my head here, but I don't like the presentation. I don't know if these guys are supposed to be bikers, biker veterans, whatever they're supposed to be. The work rate in the ring was not impressive. I mean, Wesley Blake stood out before, but Buddy Murphy was doing some really fun stuff in those matches as well. And Riker isn't even doing the big guy stuff well. He's far inferior to Lars Sullivan, who's got like 10 years less experience than he does.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
I'd much rather see a Lars Sullivan squash than a Jackson Riker squash, is what I'm saying. So Jackson Riker is not even doing that successfully. He's like the second rate Lars Sullivan on this show. I don't like the sanity comparisons because they come up in my head too. I can't say anything good about these guys other than that their music does not irritate me.
Great, faint praise.
All right. Virgil, get the basketball. We're going to tell this kid to dribble 15 right. times.
Oh, gosh. That is a great segment. I love it so much. What a jerk.
I watch that segment like once a month to remind myself how to do it.
That's great.
And the pool thing.
Oh, gosh. All right. So from there, we went into three backstage segments, and I'm going to just go ahead and rattle them all up, and we're going to talk them all at once. We got the Baszler Insane recap, so nothing new here, but we got that. We got Tony Nese talking to Kathy Kelly, and then after a commercial break, we got Bianca Belair talking to Kathy Kelly. Kind of interesting and fun to see somebody who started on 205, well, started in the Cruiserweight Classic, hop over and you know, do a job. Somebody who's able, somebody who's easily going to absorb a loss on a show that he's not even regularly on, and doing just nothing beyond his regular shtick, but just to set up this match. Bianca, obviously, as always, I'm very happy to see her, even if she's not really adding anything specific to the upcoming stuff. Nothing. I just like being able to see her once a week just because of what she brings to the show. So Baszler Sane, Tony Nese, Bianca Belair, Tom, anything on them?
Yeah, I would have been shocked if they didn't do anything with Nese regarding a 205 cross promotion if they didn't mention it. And they actually ended up mentioning it on commentary even more than I would have expected, like shouting 205 when he did a 450. So, yeah, this clearly is a promotion of the new time slot for 205 Live leading into NXT. Tell me if I'm looking for a reason to complain and if I should just be quiet, but I've decided, like, you know what? Okay. I fell back off of the 205 bandwagon again, but now it's on before NXT, which I do watch every week. And I'm already like, I'm ready to watch wrestling by 7. And that hour that I have to wait until 8 is just like, twiddling my thumbs, waiting for wrestling to start. So now I've got 205. But I've been discouraged because the 3 weeks that it's happened so far, the show is only 40 minutes long. And then I have to sit through 20 minutes of WWE Network clips.
The bumper commercials. Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. And then they show these little clips of it's just a bunch of fart and poop jokes, like where Braun Strowman has pooped and Dana Brooke farting in a car. And it just makes me not want to turn the TV on before NXT starts. So,
it's so
yeah, that's
weird.
My Tony Nese commentary.
That it's so weird that is what they give between – they're putting 205 and NXT back-to-back because they know that they're literally this is where they cater to the wrestling fan, to the one that's more discerning, the one that's not necessarily doing the kind of saturated – if the main roster is Michael Bay, then this is, I don't know, at least this is where you get your David Fincher, your Paul Verhoeven.
I was hoping you would say David Lynch.
Talk about. Lynch. Lynch is. I don't know. Lynch is probably Chikara. He's crazy.
Let's agree on Wes Anderson.
How dare you?
I have a no. Let's not. Have you know. Yeah, I'll heal on Wes Anderson after the show. It's weird that you would put such toilet humor in between these shows. What a weird spot for that. I want to say you're complaining too much because it's a very first world problem to have the wrong kind of commercials between shows.
I've got so much leisure time. I have to spend 20 minutes of my leisure time watching garbage.
It seems like such an easy thing to promote your better program, your classier programming. I don't know. It just seems like the wrong place. None of it is classy. I know. It's all silly. It's all stupid. But it seems like between there you'd put something that a more discerning viewer might care about. It's an odd time for that.
Basically, what you're saying is that 205 Live needs to be a 55-minute show like NXT.
Well, I mean, they could just pad it with more ads for the many, many different shows that they have coming up.
So what I'm hearing is that you would prefer if they took the 40 minutes and added the 20 minutes of poopy and fart jokes into 205 Live so that you could spread it out to the full hour.
That would make it more palatable, yes.
Okay.
All right. So... God, Wes
Anderson. And you just ruined
Does it
my
matter
vision.
That I didn't write a Does it matter that I didn't write a story? No, Wes Anderson, it's great. You don't need a plot. You don't need a story.
You just did it until after the show. You
I'm really
just
Wes
just
Anderson. It. You're going to give me
I will have
Wes know Anderson.
That I thought the Royal Tenet. I thought the Royal Tenenbaums was brilliant. Although that Rocket Man, Bottle Rocket, whatever it was
Bottle Rocket.
Royal Tenenbaums is his best film, and he has one other good film, and I just thought he was a fitting one to bring up as far as where I think NXT I thought it was a good analogy, but
I guess if you're anyway. You know, and we could stop for about 40 minutes and talk about this, we probably should. But
probably
I can
might.
Think of worse things to do on my birthday than talk film.
Yep.
So
I'm trying to handcuff myself.
I can't
what?
Believe that
you're trying to handcuff
sons,
yourself.
The Forgotten Sons led us into this. You know, what the hell are we even talking about?
Tom just said he's trying to handcuff himself.
Tony Nese, Bianca Belair, Justin, did we get you to weigh in on any of those three segments?
Undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I love me a Belair promo. There's just something about her where you're like, this is one cocky, arrogant jerk, and I can't wait to see her win more matches and get cockier and more arrogant.
I love the undefeated chant because it's one of those things the wrestler came up with that caught fire, and now they put themselves in a position where they can't lose because they've got a
their catchphrase.
Like, yeah, it's like Triple H saying my gimmick. It's like Triple H in the early 2000s saying, my gimmick is that I always have the world title. They're like, oh, okay, that's a good, oh, I see what you're doing. That's a little ridiculous. But it's like, but it works. So, yeah, it's with when you catch fire with this undefeated thing, it's like, okay, we can't just have her even lose something by disqualification, by countout or something like that. So not to say she had nefarious thoughts, but it's so engaging, and it's such a fun heel character moment thing that she does. She almost has to stay undefeated, but you can't do that forever when you know that she deserves a title match. But
yeah.
But I think they'll drag that out until at least I was gonna say at least November. That's not very far away. Until at least War Games.
Belair is in that weird Asuka place where, by all rights, nobody else should be carrying the jock strap of a number one contender spot right now. Mm-hmm. Because her record's so dominant. There's no way that Nikki Cross or anyone else could be standing in front of her in line, and yet it's obvious other people are in front of her in line, and that she's being kept warm for this other stuff to clear out. So I'm so high on Bianca Belair, although I got kind of annoyed when she said in this promo, when Kathy Kelly said Bianca, and she said, no, that's Miss Belair. I was like, no, that's like Mrs. Ford. You're not a miss anymore. You're married.
Well, yeah.
Or we could do like Ms.
Her character isn't necessarily married, though. So it's, oh, wait, no, her character is married.
We saw her on her honeymoon.
We saw her on her honeymoon, and they announced it. So we didn't say who she was married to. I'm fine. That would be, to me, too big a nitpick. I guess I don't mind about that.
Whatever she wants about to be called.
Plus, the character, she's the type of character who would say, you will call me what I tell you to call me. So I don't mind that. And, but that might be just because I friggin' love her. So,
I'll concede to you, birthday boy. I'll let you have your gift.
Thanks, buddy.
I'll let you finger poke me to doom.
Oh God, the finger poke of doom. A great moment in wrestling. So,
David Arquette just won the title, folks.
I probably should go ahead and talk to Prakash Sabar, do his email. Meant to do this one earlier. Anyway, given the time and effort put into the Black Attacker storyline, is there any person or explanation that would provide a fulfilling conclusion? Thanks, Prakash Sabar, Islamabad, Pakistan. Yes, there always is, but it's more satisfying when you're able to go back to the beginning of a storyline and say, oh my God, they knew right away, they set up everything. All the information was there for us to make an informed decision. That's a good mystery.
I wonder
if you can't go back and know it. David Lynch, what's it about? Doesn't matter. So it's as long as you can make sense of what's going on. Okay, I'm sorry. I have to stop. I don't hate David Lynch by any means. I really like him. I really like what he brought to Twin Peaks and everything like that. I heal on him a little bit because it seems like
he didn't have
a story. He was just like, yeah, okay, I'll just do a weird one for the sake of weird, and people will buy it.
The Twin Peaks reboot was like 18 hours of waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, so... Anyway, back to his question. The best mysteries typically will have moments where you could say, oh my God, it makes so much sense now, and they're able to show you moments where those facts were there. I think we all expressed fear that they might not know where they're going at the beginning of this story, and that makes for a problematic narrative. And if you can't go back and see any of that, or if worse yet, you go back and say that wasn't true of that character, and that literally doesn't make sense given what we knew about them at the time, then it's not a good story. Wrestling is famous for the latter, where you say that doesn't make sense because he was a heel then, and you have to essentially believe that he was essentially getting beat up by his allies for a full year as part of a long con to win a middling title at No Mercy. So it's I don't have anybody in mind, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. So
that was pretty specific.
I made it sound like it was specific, and I was thinking of an Austin moment where to believe where he had turned heel, you had to buy that he was willfully getting the crap kicked out of him and kicking the crap out of his allies. Hoping that they still came back and won a match, and I don't remember if that was the invasion match or what that was. Go ahead.
It was like when Roderick Strong turned on Pete Dunne when they were in the middle of winning the tag team championships.
Right.
And you're like, what are you doing? You had this match won.
Yep. And then your explanation is, well, we weren't going to win the titles. And you go, but
well, his explanation was that he thought that Pete Dunne was going to turn on him.
Yeah. I shouldn't apply my issues with wrestling of 20 years ago to now. But yeah, that's what, to give Prakash way too long an answer for his question, I would say that, that I will be perfectly happy if I can look back and say I should have known. But right now, I don't get the feeling we're heading toward that. I get the feeling we're heading towards something where we say, okay, I guess. And they put Nikki on top of that building or wherever she is so she could see it. So there's little hints. So it makes sense that Nikki would have seen it, but it might or might not make sense that the attacker is the attacker. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that this comes together with a perfect little bow. Tom, anything to add there?
Elephant Man, Eraserhead, Blue Velvet is my top three David Lynch films.
You named them, man. You really did.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Prichard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Okay, so we move on to Johnny Gargano versus Tony Nese. Perfectly cromulent match. A couple of awkward moments that I think angles helped out with a little bit, and one spot where I almost thought there was a cut where Gargano was trying to clothesline Tony Nese out of the ring over the top rope, and Nese maybe thought he was going to go through the top and middle ropes. Maybe it's just an unfamiliarity, just a couple of little moments, but otherwise I'm nitpicking, and I enjoyed the match. And normally I would complain that Nese got too much offense here in a match that he could not win. But I do think that this was the hard sell for 205, so you might as well have your guy make a good showing. Tom, this match.
Yeah, I guess just to springboard off of what you were saying, there definitely was no cut there, although I did notice that the same things you were noticing at a couple points through the match, which was odd to see from Nese, because what I want to say about Nese and Gargano is that these guys don't have bad matches. So this was not a bad match. There were a couple moments like that. The scary one was that first buckle bomb where Gargano snapped his head against the bottom rope.
Yeah, the head against, thankfully. Yeah. And yeah, that was pretty scary. That was odd. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you know, he's good at selling that, and you know, he knows to grip his fingers, make sure he's still got feeling, and maybe that's just him selling it. But it was still pretty scary. But I really like Tony Nese. Obviously, really like Gargano. It was a very, very good matchup. I don't, you know, we talked. I talked about the 205 thing already. If Gargano had lost this match, I would worry that he didn't progress after all of that with Tommaso Ciampa, that he's just right back to being presented the exact same way he was before. And he's now on a losing streak because he's dealing with his issues. But he won the match. So now, kind of like with Candace, I'm just intrigued to see where it goes. The spring in his step when he came out was shocking, especially after he walked out however many weeks ago last time we saw him, 3 weeks ago maybe. So I'm just my curiosity is piqued with this couple and seeing exactly what the developments are. I still feel like they or one of them may be the culprits in this black mystery. I think that's still my main theory here. So yeah, I'm curious.
Yep. And that would be fine. That would be a fine storyline tie up to this. That would be okay. What I don't want is it to be somebody who we literally didn't even know was there until now. That would be a real disappointment. So, Gargano and Nese, Yeah. Did I get Justin? Did I get you on this match yet?
No. I'll just say I enjoyed the match a lot. I thought it was a fantastic advertisement for both 205 Live and really made the case that Johnny Gargano would be a great addition to that show.
Yeah, and that's a decent place for him. And if they're going to do this as a lead-in, then it makes a lot more sense than it would have before as kind of a strange lateral move. Essentially, you're just telling the audience that was watching him and loving him and into his story, all you got to do is shift 1 hour earlier. You're watching that show that has him as a major character because you know he'll be a major character and an important character there. It makes a lot more sense now as a move for Johnny to go there. So, I could definitely see that as a move he could make. And maybe this was kind of a long con teaser to tell us that's where he's headed. But we'll see. And we've been wrong about Johnny so many times. I think we've been predicting him to go up for the last 6 months. And we've been wrong.
Six years.
Right. Well, we've been doing the show for 10 months, but I think before we all met, we all thought, okay, it's time. So Brian Alston emails us. Hello. Sorry to bring up items from last week. Number one, Lacey Evans confronted Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano. Lacey in heels looked taller than Johnny. She's billed at 5'8", Johnny 5'10", Candice 5'2". I will jump in here and say that Candice's 5'2 makes sense. I went to a live show, and Candice was selling her own merch because at live shows of indie shows, that happens a lot. You put the person out there selling their own merch. Candice and Chuck Taylor and All Ego, Ethan Page, and Shane Strickland were all selling their own merch. It was very funny to see Candice right in the middle of the floor and just looking tiny. And my wife is 5'2", so I can say 5'2 sounds right. Yeah, she's small. She wrestled Chuck Taylor on that show. It was hilarious. It was great. I loved it. So Johnny a little bit taller, but the heels, they'll put Lacey over. Number two, he says, you talked about people wearing sunglasses indoors. What I don't like is when men walk around with their sunglasses hooked on the back of their collar. And that's it. Thanks, Brian. We talked about this before the show after your email came in because we thought it was very funny. We're all on board with what you're saying. We're not fans of the sunglasses on the back of the collar. It's so weird. I don't even know who conceives of that move. If I'm wearing sunglasses, which is incredibly rare, I either leave them in the car or I put them on the front of the shirt because I will not lose them there. But the back of the shirt, I don't know. If you put your sunglasses on the back of your shirt when you go inside, by all means, send us an email and tell us why you do this. Anything on that, Justin, I can tell you are
after they let us know about it, I'm going to have to ask Virgil to hold the $1 million belt again while I ask these sunglasses on the back of the head folks to dribble the ball. Not going to kick them out of my pool. And tell them to go beat the heat somewhere else.
Right. Okay. So we go into Oni Lurkin and Danny Burch. This was an awesome segment.
Amazing segment.
I love this segment. I like these two guys anyway. I like them as wrestlers. I like them as dudes. And I thought that. I certainly feared that all we were going to get was this one-off match that was awesome, and then it was going to go nowhere from there. But this made it seem like there are way bigger things in mind for these two. They put over I don't want to call it a taunt. They're good guys and they act like good guys, but the one for one and the two for the other, the peace sign. So the one and the two. And everything they were saying, Harley is always busy at this time, but he made a point to message us at the time in our Skype chat and just call out the awesomeness of this whole segment, of this babyface segment. I don't know. It seems like they could be going somewhere with these guys where they could be winning some matches. You start putting them in, having them beat some enhancement talent. Who knows what they're going to do with these guys? The tag team division on NXT continues to surprise me. Justin, what did you think of this?
Oh, I love this. I mean, I've been a fan of these two guys as a team for a while now, but I mean, I was angry when they got booed at TakeOver, but I love this presentation. It was great. It's like this was so well done. It was nice and lengthy, meaty. It was such red meat babyface, and their whole thing about being average blokes. And I like the way Lorcan kind of tripped over that, you know, because he's not British, but he kind of tripped over saying it, and it was cute and adorable. And I'm sitting there like in the back of my head. I know I told you guys this earlier, but in the back of my head, I'm saying, I would love to see these guys build a main roster feud against the Revival, because they both have that throwback classic wrestling style, and you know all four of those guys, and I think that would be a fantastic match for the ages. Yeah. Give these guys 20 to 30 minutes, maybe an Iron Man format. And
yeah, true baby faces and true heels, a best two out of three falls would be excellent for these two.
Because yeah, obviously the Revival wins, something like that.
Yeah, Revival wins fall one, Lorcan and Birch win fall two. We all know that's going to happen, but that would storytelling wise, that could be brilliant.
It doesn't matter, because I would so invest in that, and I would pop so hard when Danny Birch picks up the win after, you know, he gets low blowed behind the ref's back with a pair of brass knuckles and somehow grits his teeth through the pain and somehow manages to fall on top of Scott Dawson and take the win, and I'd pop so hard.
Right. Tom, what'd you think of this segment?
Yeah, nothing against Danny Burch. I always have to stop myself from saying Martin Stone. nothing against Danny Burch. He's fine. I have nothing bad to say about him. When these guys got together, and almost every time I've seen them, I've been a little. There's always that little bit where I'm thinking, you know what, I was much more into Oney Lorcan as a singles act. And so there's that little bit of a dark cloud around it for me. This, assuming they go somewhere with it, this video package may have turned me around on that, because it framed everything so perfectly and put in all these little elements that just worked together so well. There's the, starting off with framing their initial competitive rivalry. You show that both of these guys are trying to win matches, which a lot of the times is a gimmick that is just, I always criticize my gimmick is that I'm a good wrestler thing. And that's not exactly what these guys had, but
like Dolph Ziggler for years was like, I steal the show every time. It's like, that's not the goal.
Yeah.
If you were a real performer, if you were a real wrestler, God, I say performer because they freaking conditioned me to say it. If you were a real
sports
wrestler,
entertainment
that's
fan,
not the goal. Ugh.
And that is probably the better comparison to someone like Dolph Ziggler who talks about that, because these guys are out to win and they were against each other. And the video just did a really excellent job of framing how they decided that they would be better together. And yeah, we saw them on a really long losing streak because they were a job team for a while. But I had completely forgotten about that takeover reaction, just completely on that, and showed how they thought, you know what, we don't care, we're still here to win the match. And they didn't, because of the injury. I like how they played that up, because I always feel like if you get injured, you should focus on it to, like, when somebody comes back and they don't reference the injury at all, there's always something you can get out of it. So I like saying that was the reason they lost the match, and that adds in the sympathy factor. These guys, you're not sitting there like, oh, these poor babies, but you do at least add in a little bit of that sympathy factor, and they seem tougher because of it. So yes, I agree, this was excellent, and the only thing I worry about is that it'll be another Shane Thorne, Nick Miller, and a couple months from now we'll be like, hey, remember that awesome video package? Well, that didn't go anywhere.
Except these guys are already over.
They
that is true.
they are more over than TM61 was yes. at that time. So, so yeah, this could be something. And I dig what you say about Lorcan being awesome as a singles act, but I'm not super worried right now, because when you've gone – when you're a singles act that loses that much – you almost need a tag team reclamation project just to get to a point where you can be pushed again. So if they move him to singles from here, this is a lot like, I don't know, to put it in terms of the main roster, it's like the Cesaro-Sheamus pairing where yeah. you weren't doing anything else with them. So you might as well put them there and have them win a lot of matches as a tag team. And then you can still have them in singles matches. And they're legit. These are not the kind of – if you take a guy from who's purely been in a tag team like Razor or Akam on the main roster and you put him in a singles match with a singles wrestler, you would never, ever buy them at all as a potential person who's going to beat – like Razor isn't going to beat Seth Rollins. But if you put Cesaro or Sheamus in that match, you can have them beat Seth Rollins. You probably don't, but you can buy it. So I think that this is – obviously, it's a smaller scale for now. But yeah, you've got guys who now you've got an embarrassment of riches of what you can do with them if you decide to really do something with them. So that was our penultimate segment, and it was a good one. And it led into the main event. On my birthday, they produced the main event of my two favorite wrestlers, EC3 and Lars Sullivan.
You're being sarcastic, sir.
I'm a little sarcastic. I was born with that gene. It was probably about – it was definitely one of the better case scenarios for this matches. It was okay. EC3 shaved off the Muppet hair. I don't know if we talked about that, but he got rid of the hair that I know.
That was me. I mentioned the burden.
We lamented. Yep. So it was it was an okay match. It's odd that we see EC3 in job territory so quick. I think we all worried that he was going to be pushed to the moon right away, and now I'm almost shocked that the opposite has happened. He's lost two big matches in a row, and then we got Lars, who already kind of had a cup of coffee at the top and did okay. I don't know what the end game is for either of these guys. This match was really weird to me just because I don't know where either of these guys is really headed. So as a main event of this episode, which I thought was otherwise pretty straightforward from an I get this, I get where they're going standpoint, I don't know what to think of where these two guys are headed. Justin, what do you think?
I think that Sullivan's heading back to the main event scene. I think that EC3 is biding his time until his spot opens up. One thing I noticed about this match is that there's an awful lot of blood for a 6.5-minute match on a Wednesday night.
Was that the length of the match?
Yeah, this was like a 6.5-minute match.
Wow, felt like an hour. Yeah, it was fine.
This was easily... Short. Actually, you know, let me just double check that, because I thought it was 6.5, but I could be wrong. 6:44. Oh. The in-ring action itself was fine, but the biggest issue for me is that I have, you know, you guys know I like watching a Sullivan squash, but this match had zero emotional investment in it whatsoever. I'm pretty sure that Sullivan was going to win here, but I was just looking. I was like, I don't care who wins. I just don't care. It doesn't matter to me. Either way, they're going to do what they want to do. It doesn't matter. And I didn't feel like this match held my interest because of that. And it's a shame, because for the amount of effort that these two put into the match, I think they both tried hard to put on a good match. And I think that if I'd been invested in the match, I would have rated this much more highly, you know. But they start off high, and EC3 doing, you know, the story of the match with EC3 struggling to do the body slam. I thought that was a good story. is kind of, you know, Hogan Andre. I thought there was some good stuff here. It's just a shame that it was ruined by the fact that I could not care less who won.
It was early in EC3's turn, which I think we can all assume is now an official face turn.
A face turn or a heel turn?
I think a face turn for EC3.
Yeah, this felt like a babyface match for him.
Yeah, if this is a babyface turn for him, it was... You just illustrated my point. We should know what this was meant to be, and it should be clearer if they want us to invest in him as a face. So if he is... the people who weren't cheering EC3 before were not doing it just because of the presentation as a heel. It was because he's a tool. And it's... If you want it to get him... cheered, like, they presented him as total babyface tonight, but they've never done that backstage. They've presented him as kind of jerky to a point where they wanted to, and I get it because it's NXT, they want to have their cake and eat it too. You want to have a guy be a heelish face or a face-ish heel so you can make that change, call that audible if you need to. So I guess that's fine, but I thought that this was I almost think this did damage to EC3 just because if he was going to turn face and they were going to push this match with Lars, I feel like he should have beaten a couple of enhancement talents while working face first to get us on his side. And I just don't know if that happened yet.
Like this match is the match that the frustrated babyface uses to justify a heel turn.
Yeah.
I can't get the job done because I'm following the rules, and you guys don't give me enough support, so forget you, and I'm going to cheat. Like, that's the match that justifies a heel turn, not the match you use to make somebody look like a baby face.
Right.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Tom, what'd you think of this main event?
I thought it was good for what it was. I'm still in big question mark territory as far as the trajectory for either guy or if this is going to be a continuing storyline. Last week we were talking about what the implications of a finish or non-finish here could be. Not that I would have really vouched for a non-finish here going in, just because we've had a couple of main event non-finishes recently and it would just feel like too much at this point. So I guess I'm glad they did a clean finish, but I felt like you don't want to take away from either guy here, so keep it going until you can get them in a gimmick match where the loser is protected because of the gimmick.
That's why you don't book this match.
Well, I agree with you that this the only thing that I can conceive of right now is that this is the fodder that EC3 uses to try to be a legitimate heel. But the thing is, they know that's not going to work. They know that he's still going to get cheered.
All right. So odd main event, and we've seen a few of those lately. And I forgive that on this stage because we're figuring out what guys should be, and that's fine. That's why I love this show. So we have one more email. It is from JB from Detroit. With what we all think is to be the debut of Matt Riddle in the near future, I assume before War Games, I was thinking of the problem that NXT faces in presenting some of the more recent signings in the last year or two, i.e. Adam Cole, EC3, Keith Lee, Ricochet, and Matt Riddle. All of these guys came from indie promotions with great fanfare. Therefore, it is difficult to cast them as heels because of positive fan reaction, even if that is the role in which they perform best. Cole is technically a heel who gets arguably the most cheers in NXT. They tried to cast EC3 as a heel to start and have since given up and turned him face without much explanation. Keith Lee and Matt Riddle will likely be and or continue to be cast as babyfaces, even though they have heel elements like Bask in My Glory or King of the Bros. And Ricochet is correctly placed as a babyface with his style and likability. Do you guys think NXT needs to go to the extra mile to cast some of these guys as heel and work to get them appropriate heat so as not to have too thin a babyface roster? Also, where do you see Cole, EC3, Lee, Ricochet, and Riddle being cast 1 year from now, main roster or NXT? Love the show and keep up the great work. That is a big final question as far as where they're going to be. I think where they're going to be is dictated more by what the business is. You obviously, of the five guys you mentioned, not all of them will be down in NXT, but sometimes people stay in NXT to sell tickets. Sometimes they stay in there because there's no place to move them without backing them up. The Authors of Pain were held back because there was no spot for them, and then when they were finally moved up, there continued to be no real spot for them, and that's only recently potentially changing. So that is, for me, an unanswerable question, I hate to say. I don't know when these guys will be called up, and part of the reason it's so hard to predict is because it's dictated by need and not talent level. If it was purely talent level, I'd probably have something to say. As far as casting some of these guys as heels, that's very hard. WWE did, however, used to be good at it. Take a look at Chris Jericho's debut at SummerSlam 98 or 9. Somewhere around there, he came out. There were going to be cheers, and he heeled on the audience immediately. He set it up immediately. There was no leaning into it. He just went at it. And then they had The Rock come out, the hottest face there was, and they had him respond to him. So actually, that was an episode of Raw. I don't think that was SummerSlam.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the... Okay, yeah. He interrupted The Rock. Yeah.
Okay, are you talking about the clock countdown?
Yeah, the Millennium Countdown.
So yeah, exactly.
At any rate... have a guy who is almost certainly going to be cheered because you love his work. You love everything about him. You love, except for the fact that it was unfortunate that he was on a show that you didn't want to watch anymore. So you were so excited to see him. And then you set up that feud, that match, that everything right away. So to have Keith Lee come in right away, if you wanted him to be a heel at all, then having him just come out, say a promo, one or two promos, and then go in against an enhancement talent isn't really going to do it. You've got to make some kind of bigger statement with these guys. But I understand why they don't make the bigger statement, because if you make a big statement and it flops, then you're basically pot committed to the statement. Or, you know, this is a taped show, so you can always tape something else if you really need to. But I too, think it's unfortunate that you can't cast these guys as obvious heels right away. But I think you can do a quick turn given the right storytelling if you have to. So, Tom, I think this is an interesting question for you because you are there with the live show, with the bizarre and lovely and crazy Full Sail crowd. What do you think?
This is simultaneously my most and least favorite topic because I find it absolutely fascinating, perhaps the most fascinating thing to consider in today's wrestling landscape. However, I still haven't found the right phrase to describe exactly how I feel about it. Everything I can think to say about it contradicts another way that I genuinely feel about it. And I think the newest thing that I can bring to this conversation that we have had and will continue having is that in Adam Cole's recent interview on the ENC podcast that we talked about last week as well, he acknowledged the fact that he's a heel who gets cheered a lot. And he said that as a stable, as Undisputed Era, they have come to terms with the fact that, you know what, they are just going to cheer us when we come out. There's nothing we can do about that. They are going to cheer us when we can come out. You can agree or disagree with that. I will go to the unaired portion of Velveteen Dream's promo recently when he was going up against EC3, where Full Sail was cheering him so much and to the point where it was distracting him. And he turned on the crowd and really laid into the crowd in a way that, I mean, you can't help, but it should have worked. It should have worked that same way that what Chris Jericho was doing worked. But we appreciate that. It's the reason we cheer him is because he's good at what he does, and because he's further proving that he's good at what he does in theory by healing on the crowd to try to get the reaction he wants. He's then getting more of that positive reaction because he's giving us more of what we want. And maybe the audiences just appreciate something different nowadays. But what Cole was saying was that he just has to accept that. But what he can really put effort into is making sure that by the end of that match, people are cheering for his opponent to win. And I personally feel that he has achieved that again and again, particularly in this feud with Ricochet, I think, because, you know, I guess speaking personally, I'm more excited to see Cole's entrance than Ricochet's entrance. But by the end, I'm a little bit, you know, I feel more positively about Ricochet going over because I feel like that's, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't speak subjectively here because I'm not Ricochet's biggest fan, but I feel like Cole has done a good enough job of at least creating that result. Like, all right, you're going to cheer me during my entrance, but I can at least tell you a story in the match that's going to make you like the other guy better by the end. Now, when it comes to these five guys that JB has laid out, I don't know what this Fox deal is going to bring, for better or for worse. I'm fearing that that's a whole other conversation. Yeah, there's a lot to be seen. But I will say that right off the bat, Ricochet, I don't know. I was wrong about how he was going to come into NXT. I'll probably be wrong about how he's going to translate to somewhere on the main roster. So that one, I don't know. Cole, I think they're going to keep him heel for a while, put him up to the main roster maybe within the year, but I see white hot babyface potential in this guy anywhere on the card. I think that if they turn him right, it could just be a hugely popular act. EC3, I definitely, probably more than anybody else, I see him going up to the main roster within the next year, perhaps even within the next 6 months. And I see his ceiling as being The Miz, and his floor as being where Bobby Roode currently is. I know.
Give you the million-dollar belt.
And Matt Riddle, I think he's going to be the next guy that, you know, assuming everything goes as we imagine it will go, I think he'll be the next guy that they use in the Gargano Black role of like, okay, other people are going up, you're going to stick around because you're the one we can sell tickets on, and he'll be
absolutely
a main event player.
Totally. I think he'll be the torchbearer for a while there.
Yep. And I absolutely agree that I think we are going to see him soon, and I think he's going to have a match with Ono at TakeOver. I think that match has happened once or twice on live events. I know he's definitely worked a live event or two, and he's over in the UK right now, I believe. And as we record this, and who is the other one? Keith Lee. Weird comparison to EC3. I don't get the EC3 reactions, but I at least get that there is something to react to with Keith Lee. It's not that there's nothing. We've complained about how much he catchphrases, and so that's something. And I've complained, I think agreeably with at least one of you, that it's the whole like, oh, he's a big guy who does things that big guys shouldn't be able to do. It's just really rote to me at this point, especially the way they're presenting it. It's giving me nothing to react to. So I don't get the reactions. I think it is that ROH phenomena that that Justin was referring to. However, I fear, and I guess I prefaced that the way I did just so I could use that word, fear. And hopefully I get turned around. Hopefully a year from now I'm like, you know what? I was wrong about that Keith Lee guy. I think he will also find his way to the main event, and we will be seeing him as a title challenger, maybe sooner rather than later.
All right, Justin, if you can remember the question after all that, go ahead and let me know what you think.
I think my executive summary of this is that there's certain people that NXT brings in where it doesn't matter how they present them, the audience is going to cheer them. Adam Cole and Keith and Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish were presented as strongly as you could as heels. When they're, especially Cole, you know, coming in and ambushing whoever it was at the end of that match, right? You cannot present these guys as heels any more strongly. And yet they got cheered. This is not a problem with NXT's booking. This is a problem with the folks at Full Sail. And the only way you're going to fix this is if you show up to Full Sail University, get a ticket, stand in line, and boo the right people and cheer the right people. That's how you fix this problem. And ignore whatever Jeremy Borash is trying to do to ruin my show.
Oh, I'll have some thoughts on that on an upcoming episode.
All right. So we have gotten to the end of the show, which means I have one thing to throw to each of these guys about. Tom, we're going to start with you. You went to a live show, and you're going to tell us about it. It is time for that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I guess I was planning on indulging a little bit, but we've gone long, so I think rather than reading from my report, I'll say that I do have a report on PW Torch. If you want to know about some of the other undercard matches, like who Tony Nese wrestled, yes, he was there, you know, and other stuff. I'll just go from memory here, so I can pepper in some extra details. But yeah, check out the report if you want the full rundown. This was pretty special because it was my kid's first live wrestling event, and we got front row seats. We were right on the corner at the entrance ramp, so there were definitely high fives to be had. You know, thank yous go out to Jesse Elabin, MJ Jenkinson, Kavita Devi in particular for the high fives for my daughter. It was really special for her. The women's portion of the show was really cool. But I don't know how much I can say about it because WWE it involved the women's UK champion. And I'm sure that some people are still trying to keep who that is a secret. WWE does not have her on their champions page. They're not talking about it a lot, but it also doesn't seem to be a secret, particularly considering, I found out because it was all over social media when it happened. And they booked her on this show. So as much as I want to talk about her and say that it was really cool to see a women's portion of a live event built around this person, I'm just not going to because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who doesn't want it spoiled. Even though if you follow me on Twitter, I already kind of did that myself because I thought, well, if they're spoiling it, then I'll just put this photo up there to share it. Anyway, the show opened with a battle royal, women's battle royal for the chance to wrestle the UK women's champion later on in the night. And Jesse Elabin won that. It was apparently her first battle royal win, maybe her first championship match too. The final four, I'll say final five, because people like Io Shirai, and she was the fifth to last one in there. Final four were Nikki Cross, Jesse Elabin, Lacey Evans, and Vanessa Bourne, and they did a thing where Vanessa Bourne thought she won, but Jesse Elabin's feet hadn't touched yet, so she came back in and won. They did a little promo segment with Cassius Ohno coming out. It was apparently his 20th anniversary as a wrestler. And they had him talking about his why he loves wrestling and his some of his most famous rivalries. As he was listing some of his most famous opponents, somebody in the crowd shouted CM Punk. And he said, yeah, I wrestled that guy a few times. Adam Cole came out. He congratulated Cassius Ohno on 20 years of mediocrity, which led to a challenge of a match, which Cole didn't want to do. But they said later that William Regal, who obviously wasn't there, but, you know, they said William Regal said that the match was going to happen as the main event. And then in the main event, it was ended via interference as Bobby Fish jumped on the ring apron to distract Cassius Ohno, and Roderick Strong jumped in from the crowd. Cassius did sort of like he managed to ward it off for a little while, but it ended up ending in DQ as Roderick Strong pulled Cassius Ohno out of the ring. Or no, he pulled Drake Wirth out of the ring after another ref got clocked in the face by Cassius Ohno. It was a good ref bump. So the cool thing that happened was in the aftermath of the event, Cesaro appeared. I believe he lives locally, so it wasn't much of a trip. You know, his wife is kind of the women's trainer at the PC, or girlfriend maybe, a girlfriend. So the Kings of Wrestling reunited and ran the Undisputed Era sans Kyle O'Reilly from the ring. Afterwards, they cut. Cesaro said, Cassius, well, you know what? It's still weird calling you Cassius. And he addressed him and very briefly, and he said, Chris is awesome, and tried to get that chant going. And then Cassius Ohno talked about how much he loves wrestling and how much he, and, you know, he thanked the crowd for supporting everybody else.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Now